Sarah Stonish is the best-selling author of the novel These Granite Islands. She's also written Ice Chorus and the memoir Shelter. She has a new novel out. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press. It's called Vacation Land, and Sarah Stonish is back with us on Northern Community Radio. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Rachel. Oh, I'm sorry, Heidi.
Well, I think I said your last name wrong to begin with, and then I just realized that I have the advanced reading copy, so I think a novel is on that, but is that not on the...
It is on that, and they did take it off of the second one.
Yeah.
Off of the real printing.
So,
it doesn't say a novel anymore.
Yeah, so I probably should have just said you had a new book out. So we'll just start. We'll deal with that part later. But
all right.
Thank you for being here. How is that? So Vacation Land, I just finished reading this. I really enjoyed it. It's not maybe a traditional book with a central character, but there is something central to it. And that's the place of northern Minnesota, but also specifically this lodge. Can you tell us about the lodge?
I mean, I feel like the place is a central character in the book, and it's called Milady Lodge, and it's not a very specific place. It's more or less my memories of all of the lodges that I've ever been to sort of rolled into one, and yeah, it's pretty much a character in the book. There's also a regular character who weaves in and out, who goes through the entire book, and that's the protagonist, Meg, the painter, who returns to the resort.
It's so interesting to read a book like yours because we are finding some similarities in characters, but it's not maybe a traditional structure because we're learning about a lot of different people. We learn about Meg at different periods, and it's sort of woven. And that's part of, I think, the appeal of this book is there's a richness to it that it's almost like we have to build some ideas of these people on our own, because it's just a really interesting way for you to tell these stories. As a writer, did you know how to put this together? How did that happen?
You know, I was inspired by the idea. I had this image in my head of a resort register that you would sign, and I liked the idea of using that as a structure. And then it was intriguing enough for me to want to weave the characters in and around that particular structure. And then, of course, the lodge is there. So the visitors are coming and going from the lodge. They're coming in and out of time in memory and place, coming from all over the world. Mostly are Midwesterners, but, I mean, there's characters that are coming from Europe and Canada. But they all have this one major thing in common, and that's the location, and that's Milady Lodge.
Tell us about the landscape of Milady Lodge, what this place is actually like.
I think it's pretty typical when we picture, I think of northern Minnesota, the ledged rock lakes, the boundary waters, the mossy, lichen-y sort of stony woods, black spruce. That's the landscape that I grew up with in my summers in northern Minnesota. You know, those big granite slopes that go down into the lakes. And, you know, these are they're not cabin-y cabins and resorty resorts. They're sort of the old, more rugged style, I'd say. Back when resorts were resorts. Really fishing resorts.
That's right. And I know a lot of people listening to us either went to those resorts or, like me, I grew up, I was a kid who our family owned a resort, and sort of I loved the stories of Meg as she was young and sort of the hard work you learn as a resort kid, but it really becomes a part of your character, that sort of lifestyle in the summertime.
Yes, and I did want to write about the visitors to the area and their reactions to it, but this is less about, I mean, it's as much about them as it is the people who run the place, the beer truck drivers and the bait shop owners, and I wanted to tell their stories. I was kind of moved to challenge this idea that a lot is written about these areas, but less about the people that line the roads to them, sort of the supporting cast of characters that make resorts possible, and small towns, like Ely or Bemidji or Brainerd, any of those towns.
So tell us about Meg. She is the central character to this. We meet her at various times in her life. How would you introduce her to someone?
She's really kind of a loner. She's come back to the resort. She's in her, well, we don't know how old she is. I'm going to say she's somewhere around 40. She's a woman of a certain age. And she's coming back, and she's decided to stay there for a while and paint. And sort of take that time to decide what to do. And during the time that she's there, she can't help but have all of these memories come back and really goes through what her life was like at the resort since the time she was 5 and her parents were killed in an airplane crash. And she was then under the care of her grandfather, who was the original owner of the resort. And going through the years with him and then being sent off to boarding school, coming back, leaving again, living abroad, coming back, going to art school, coming back. It's the sort of place that you have to come back to. There's kind of no getting away from it. She's tied to this place by legacy, not always by choice.
It seems to me that you have created this cast of characters in the book that do not fit into that quaint character of a northern Minnesotan.
Well, I really don't care for that stereotype. There's a few different Minnesota stereotypes, and we're actually much better than that. We're more diverse. Not all the children are above average, and not all the men are good-looking, you know. We're very real people. And another thing that I really wanted to explore in the book was the relationship between townies and visitors. I think sometimes there's this misconception that, you know, the townies are somehow have a leg up on things. You know, they're more sophisticated. They're more this. They've got more money. And that's another stereotype that I wanted to really challenge, because I don't find it true.
There are characters that I was drawn to within this, but there are especially some female characters that I really loved reading about. You mentioned a character who delivers beer. I wonder if you tell us more about this Ursa that you have created.
Ursa Olson is, we think she's in her 90s, and her granddaughter also shows up in the book. But Ursa is, she's a gnarly old lady. And it's funny because she might be the character that I most relate to, though I am not an NRA card-carrying member of. She's just really feisty. And she's lived a long life, and she's put up with a lot of stuff, and she's over putting up with crap, more or less. She doesn't really have time for it. She does what she needs to do and wants to do, and I really related to her a lot. I also thought she was very funny. No time for nonsense.
Tell us about her connection to Meg's grandfather. That was, every once in a while when you read a book, you kind of get some hints of something. And I was surprised and sort of delighted by their connection.
They are probably the two least likely characters in the book to have a romance. And that's Meg's grandfather and this woman, Ursa, who delivered beer to the resort for a number of years during the 60s and 70s. And they're both very taciturn and not very emotive or open people, but they're very similar, and they click, and they have this relationship for many years that's very quiet. It's never announced. It's never acknowledged, really, outside of the two of them. Even Vax's granddaughter is quite unsure about the relationship until later in life when she figures it out. And like a lot of grandchildren or children, you're always shocked to find out that your parent or grandparent had this in their life, that they had romance and that they made love and had something wonderful, really. And she was glad for that, to find out that these two old people had something really lovely that she actually hasn't really had yet in her own life.
We're talking with Sarah Stonich about her new book that's out. It's called Vacation Land, published by the University of Minnesota Press. I wonder if we can talk about another character. And I think I had read this story somewhere else, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been in a short story anthology, The Elpo Lottie's Hobby.
Yes, it was part of the Dylan Days that's where you would have read it, yeah.
So tell us about this man and what his hobby is.
He is a topiary. You know, I haven't really talked about that story. Albo is a retired machinist, and after his wife Rose dies, he's looking for a hobby. And he sort of falls into one where he starts planting trees in his yard. But yet he's so used to being controlling and having this mode of perfection being a machinist that he can't let his trees alone. And so he trims them in these very tight conical topiary manners. That's one of the ways that he deals with his grief, I think. Although he may not even realize that, but it's called Lottie's Hobby. And it's a place that people drive by all the time and sort of wonder about, but very few people ever stop. It's this weird anomaly that is this very, very manicured number of trees, like soldiers almost, and set in this wilderness backdrop. It's very unusual looking. And Meg comes out to paint it at a particular point when it looks like a lot of the trees in the hobby might die. He wants to make sure that he's got some sort of record of his hobby. And so she comes out and paints a picture of it.
Sarah, is there a place that you know or someone that has done that? Or is that out of your mind completely?
You know, there's a house on the way into Ely on Highway 169 that I've been passing on my way in there for 40 years. And the trees are very tightly trimmed. They're big evergreen trees, spruce. And they're nothing like the hobby, but they inspired the idea of the hobby. Huh. Just the idea of someone taking the time when their yard is backed by wilderness, that they are going to civilize the front of it, the trees that they see out their front windows and the road beyond, they have some control of that while the wilderness sort of hunkers at their back.
There are many characters and many places, so that means there's a lot of names that you have to come up with. It's always kind of interesting to hear an artist, their creative process a little bit. But, you know, for instance, the character we were just talking about, Elpo Lati, do these names come easily to you? Is there a process you go through to come up with them?
I like to find a name that is somewhat memorable. And one of the things that I do almost every day is I live two blocks from a very large cemetery in Minneapolis. And I take my dog there and we walk. And it's quite a place to be looking for names. Sometimes they just jump out at me and I think I will name a character that. Sometimes I'll be going and looking for a name for a character and maybe sometimes come up empty-handed. But for every headstone that's in that place, there's a story behind it. And I'm just really intrigued by the names, particularly when you get into these regions where, you know, in Ely, in that part of Minnesota, there's so many Finnish names. And you get the Scandinavian names when you get closer to Lake Superior, and you get the German names when you go south. So I'm very intrigued by how places are colonized by these groups of people. And the names are really this fun way to identify these areas.
I suppose you just know when it's the right name for that character. It just fits.
Yeah, well, like Ursa's family, her father was an astronomer. So all of the women in the family are named after various constellations. And so it was interesting to go looking for what would be the best name for my character, who's the older woman who's very fierce. And, of course, Ursa means bear, and she's very bear-like. And then Cassie, the granddaughter, is named after Cassiopeia. And she hates her name. She understands that it's her given name, but she's not able to give it back. Having fun with names like that, it can be kind of a game. And so to name that family with the constellations was very fun.
You know, that was a moment in reading your book where I stopped and I laughed out loud about Cassiopeia being her given name. I'd never really heard anybody say it in that way, that you can't give a name back, and this kind of that odd concept we have of a given name.
And it would be just like a teenager to want to give their name back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the title is Vacation Land. Tell us what that means to you in terms of the stories that you've written.
You know, it was the working title for the book for a long time. And the longer I was working with it, it just grew on me and grew on me. I didn't want to name it to be a very specific place. I didn't want to give it a very Minnesota name, because I feel like the sensibility of it sort of goes beyond our borders, that's for sure. I just grew to love the name, and fortunately my publisher loved it too. And also, like, the different chapters in the book each have a title, and they have, like, hesitation. So it has that shun at the end of it. And that was this kind of vehicle. There's separation, there's hesitation, reparation. Those are all the titles in the book. And they directly branched off from vacation.
Hmm.
So that's kind of how that happened.
Oh, that's interesting. The new book by Sarah Stonich is called Vacation Land. How do you describe... It's fiction, not exactly a novel, though.
I'd say it's a novel in stories. My publisher originally did have novel on the cover, but I wanted readers to be able to decide for themselves what it was. It is very much like a novel, yet some of the stories stand on their own, yet they do relate to the ones before and after them. I'm happy to call it a novel, but I want the reader to call it what they want.
I think it could definitely, a lot of them could be their own stories, but they end up meaning so much more because they're collected in the way that they're presented to us. And it was a great way to put together a story in a way that I hadn't read before, which is always kind of a thrill when you read something that isn't like something else.
I think it's really nice for the reader, as they're going along, to recognize something in this part of the book that they read earlier, and for them to pull it in, sort of under their own steam, to pull it into that story and go, oh, yeah, I remember that from, oh, you know, really, oh, these people had this connection. And I think that's a fun way to read. You have a sense of discovery as the reader when you're going through and putting together these pieces and making these connections for yourself.
Again, it is called Vacation Land. You can find a lot of information on Sarah's website, including her schedule, where she'll be touring and talking about her book in northern Minnesota. It's at sarahstonich, sarahstonich.com. Sarah, is there anything I might have missed you'd like to add about Vacation Land?
It was really the most fun that I've had writing anything yet. And I really hope that comes through in the writing and in the work, and that people are left with a sense of this amazing place that they probably have some connection to, a similar place themselves. It's about place, and it's about us and how we are in place.